Welcome back, everyone. For today, I'm actually going to do another In Memoriam episode. This time, Anita Wren joins me, who you might remember from my Julie Cruise tribute. But before we get into it, I'll hand over the microphone so she can introduce herself further.
Hi, Colin. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, of course. To start off, is that we have Annette McCarthy, who unfortunately died at 64 on the 6th of January last year. Before we go too much further, here's Thor Åmli's tribute to Annette McCarthy.
Hi, my name is Thor Åmli, and I'm from Norway. I am perhaps one of the few who enjoyed the Evelyn and James story. I first saw Twin Peaks when it aired in 1990 and 1991 on Norwegian television. At that time, I was 14 and 15 years old. I remember Evelyn's story as scary and very unpleasant at that time. I realized there was something fishy about Malcolm, but I didn't quite know what. And the music that is used in the scenes in the Evelyn and James story, I think was scary and spooky in every way. It made a real impression on me, so that's probably why I don't see that part as silly or unnecessary. And when her husband was also violent, I found this part of Twin Peaks sad, and I remember having incredible sympathy for Evelyn. Annette McCarthy has always been incredibly kind in replying to private messages or greetings and things like that. And when I think about what she shared on her private Facebook page, I saw a very proud, smiling, and strong lady, incredibly kind and generous with those who were a part of her life. And she definitely had her battles in her private life with cancer. She was a real fighter. For me, every piece in Twin Peaks is an important piece, regardless of comedy, drama, or soap opera. Annette, you were an important piece for me and many others. Thank you very much for letting us get to know you through Twin Peaks, but also through your involvement and love on Facebook. Thank you very much, Annette. Lots of love from Norway.
I think that in the case of Annette McCarthy, I think that she did the best that she could with that material. And I look at the behind the scenes with her and James Marshall. Like, if anyone's read through Reflections or The Essential Wrapped in Plastic, they both have very fond memories of those scenes. And like the way they talk about it, it actually does kind of enhance it for me, knowing how much fun they had. I guess before we get into Annette's filmography, did you have anything you want to talk about in terms of what she brought to Twin Peaks?
Oh, I agree. I agree with Thor. I have a special place in my heart for that storyline. I think it plays really, really well as the soap opera that part of Twin Peaks is. It's very dramatic. Like Thor said, I was a little bit older when I saw it, but I saw it when it originally aired, and it was very dramatic. And I thought Annette was fantastic. And I thought James was fantastic as well. I saw him on a panel years ago talking about filming that and how much work that was. I have great respect for it. I'm a fan of that storyline. I don't know. I think maybe you need to dig a little deeper. And like you said, maybe have a little background.
Even though, like, on previous episodes, I've shown that I don't really, while I'm not big on this arc in particular, I thought Annette McCarthy did great work in, like, the femme fatale role. And the thing is that you look at her throughout the 80s and 90s, you know, she was finding work on great stuff. She was on Happy Days, Magnum P.I., Saint Elsewhere, the 80s version of The Twilight Zone, Night Court. There was the cult film Creature. One thing I'll mention about her role in Twin Peaks is that she was hired by David Lynch, and personally by David Lynch. So I think that really says that there's something about that femme fatale role that was not unlike Alice from Lost Highway, that there's that archetype that really stood out to David Lynch. She did retire from acting softly after an episode of Baywatch. She would go on to do a few more commercials and a few like smaller scale work, but she would become an executive chef. I think it was primarily specialized in Italian food. She was like a director of client services for Mercury Sound Studios. So It's like even though she didn't do acting for too much after Twin Peaks, she seemed to find work that she was really passionate about during that time.
Yeah, she was a really incredible, busy, busy woman.
And I remember actually, you actually showed me this great picture of you with Annette McCarthy. It seemed like she was, Thor mentioned it, and other people I've seen off the podcast talk about is that she was always very personable with fans. Like, did you have any particular fond memories of like talking with her?
She was very approachable and just a naturally friendly, funny, intelligent woman, but she would get into conversations online, and we talked and really connected and developed a friendship over the years. And on a one of my trips down to Southern California, I'd let her know that I was going to be down there. And so we met up for lunch in Santa Monica, and we sat outside a cafe, and we talked and talked and talked for hours. And the cafe had closed, and we were still sitting outside and talking. I had walked her to her car. We were still talking. She took a CD out of her glove box to loan to me to listen to, and we talked some more. And it was just incredible. And I value that time so much with her, because even though we had made plans when we parted to do that again soon, I think it was shortly after that that she got the diagnosis and started battling cancer. And then we lost her, unfortunately, but she is just amazing. And what funny story from that time, just how kind of modest she was and unassuming. She and I were sitting and is just talking about this and that. And she had recently moved out of a home that she lived in with her son because her son had gotten married. So she downsized and was renting a home at a very like longtime friends of hers, a husband and wife. And she was renting like a mother-in-law suite on their property. And she said, she was telling me about some of the challenges of downsizing, but how close she was with these friends of hers, and that she particularly liked the they had a daughter that would bring the children over and visit their grandchildren over to visit the girls. And she loved that they would come over and swim. And she'd said that sometimes that their dad would bring them, and he was just a really great guy. And she paused and she said, maybe you know of him. She said, do you know the band Foo Fighters? And I'm like, what? Do I know the band Foo Fighters? Like, second only to Nirvana. And like, I'm a huge Foo Fighters fan. She said, oh, well, then Dave Grohl will bring his daughters over. He's married to my friend's daughter. And so he comes over for barbecues, and he comes over and swims with the kids all the time. She said, next time you come down, you come over and hang out by the pool, and we'll see if we can get Dave to bring the girls by. And I was like, what? Okay. And we never got a chance to do that. But it was just so Annette, the way that she was just so matter of fact. Oh, Dave Grohl.
She always seemed like someone who was always like, you could tell that family was something that meant a lot to her just based off of her social media. As Thor said in his recording, she was always like very easy to reach, very kind-hearted. People can say what they will about Evelyn Marsh, but I think Annette McCarthy brought a lot to that role and to like anything that she did in her life. And I think that she will be very dearly missed.
Oh, for sure. And I'm so happy she got a chance to be a grandmother before she passed away. I think that was like one of the greatest joys of her life, because she loved her children and she loved that new grandbaby so much. So that warms my heart and makes me happy. But right, she is the quintessential like 90s suit, dress, blonde, amazing. Yeah, she is missed for sure.
Absolutely. And the next recording we have is by Agent Ivy, and this is for Annie Wersching, who portrayed Tammy Preston in the Mark Frost books.
Anyone who knows me and my relationship with Twin Peaks knows that I have a mild obsession for the secret history of Twin Peaks. I know the book isn't everyone's cup of tea, but I love it. My personal copy of the book is dog-eared and post-it noted and full of notes and doodles. but it was the audio version of the book that just unlocked something in my imagination that is still hard for me to distill. I'll admit I have listened to the audiobook at least 10 times, probably more, all the way through. I'm always captivated. I always feel like I get something new. And when I'm feeling out of sorts in any way, listening to the book brings me a calm mind. And for me, a big reason for that is the voice of the person responsible for determining who the archivist is. We were initially introduced to her as Special Agent TP, otherwise known as Tamara Preston, and in real life, the actor Annie Wershing. Annie Wershing was a mother, a wife, a daughter, a dancer, and a very fine actor. Before hearing her voice as Agent Preston for both The Secret History of Twin Peaks and The Final Dossier, I was unfamiliar with her work. Her acting career was very successful, and the parts she played were complex and also greatly appreciated by her fans. While she spent the early part of her young adult life preparing for her career in entertainment, studying dramatic arts and also acting in plays, in 2001, she broke her way onto the television scene with a part on an episode of Star Trek Enterprise. From there, she went on to have a very busy and consistent acting career, playing parts on TV shows including Charmed, Angel, CSI, NCIS, and Boston Legal. She would go on to have regular roles on very popular shows such as 24, The Vampire Diaries, Bosch, and General Hospital. In one of her most well-known and more recent acting roles, she played the Borg Queen in Season 2 of Star Trek Picard. And for the PlayStation nerds out there, she was the original voice and motion capture actor for the character Tess on the video game The Last of Us. But, of course, the standout role for us Peaks freaks is Annie Wershing as the voice of Special Agent Tamara Preston in the Twin Peaks books written by Mark Frost. The Secret History of Twin Peaks was released in October 2016, and The Final Dossier was released late 2017 after The Return had aired. As Tamara Preston in the first book, Annie was among many other cast members, but The Final Dossier was a solo show for her, and both performances were and are stellar. I was a latecomer to The Secret History of Twin Peaks. The Return had already aired completely when I even realized there was a Twin Peaks novel by Mark Frost, let alone a second one on its way to being published. I devoured the book, but I decided to get the audiobook as well. And I'm so glad I did. I was absolutely blown away by what a remarkable ensemble had been put together for the project. And I remember distinctly when I heard Annie Wershing's voice for the first time. I could tell instantly that she was a very good actor, and I found myself completely captivated by her voice and her encapsulation of the role. While I don't have any insight into how she was directed to play and read the part, Annie delivered in exactly the right tone and attitude. Her voice is wry and sarcastic, serious and humorous. She uses her emotions in such a deft manner that it makes you really feel the story. I know there have been many opinions about the role of Tamara, aka Tammy, Preston. While I still have some moments where I find the material a little puzzling when it comes to Tammy in The Return, I am so fond of Krista Bell, and now I can't imagine The Return without her. And I love Annie Wershing as Special Agent Preston in Mark Frost's books. She made the character pop right off the page. From her voice to her pacing to her incredibly natural way, she became Tamara Preston, and I fell in love with the book. In the summer of 2020, some would say at the top of her success, Annie Wershing was diagnosed with cancer, and on January 29th of this year, she passed away. She was 45. It's understood that she kept her diagnosis very private and continued to work up until very close to the time of her death. You can see from her Instagram page, which is still active, that she loved her family with her whole heart, and her fans and her work meant the world to her. While I didn't know Annie Wershing personally, I sort of feel like I do. Her life had an impact on mine in a very positive way that I'm forever grateful for, and I know she is profoundly missed. Verified. TP.
I know that Annie Wershing isn't necessarily like a name that a lot of us think about when we think about Twin Peaks, but I think of like the fact that she actually technically portrayed Tammy more prominently than Krista Bell, and it was also a different characterization as well. I guess before we get any further, did you want to talk about what Annie Wershing brought to Tammy Preston?
Yeah, I'm actually really big fan of Agent Ivy. I find her so eloquent And I love the books, but I have trouble sitting down and reading like that. So I immediately got the audiobook and listened to it. And I agree, that was an incredible performance. But I have such an emotional connection to the original Twin Peaks that I did have some issue with some of the things that weren't necessarily, the continuity things that went on in the book. However, as a standalone, I think those books are fantastic. They're absolutely fantastic. And I think that just correct. And it makes me now want to go back and listen to the book again.
Yeah, because I actually listened to it for the first time last summer. And one of the things that stood out to me is that people talk about the characterization of Tammy, how different she is in The Return portrayed by Chrissa Bell compared to the Mark Frost audiobooks. But I think that the way Annie Wersching just portrayed it in this, it felt like it was almost like a work mode version of Tammy, someone who's very like down to business, very much just like trying to get to the bottom of a mystery. And I think that she actually helped with the characterization for me of like that these don't feel like two different characters, but rather like one's in a work mode, the other is like in the way of becoming like a member of the Blue Rose Task Force, and just the priorities are different. But to step away from what she brought to the Mark Frost audiobooks, we should talk about her work on TV because she was very prominent from 2002 to 2022. Her biggest roles were 24, Bosch, The Vampire Diaries, Runaways, The Rookie, and Star Trek Picard. Yeah, and then she always found work constantly on a lot of other TV shows during that time. And that's like, I think when it comes to actors, they're just happy to find work and just constantly do something to elevate their craft. I guess also we should talk about the more serious parts that she kept her cancer a well-guarded secret since, I believe, the summer of 2020. And I think that it shouldn't be talked about is that she died like very tragically young. She was only 45 years old when she succumbed to cancer.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
I think of like something like, say, Brian Son from decades ago. That was a movie that came out of time when someone young had cancer, but cancer was a death sentence. I really do sometimes forget how cancer can take the lives of people at that young of an age, because we think that it's gone beyond this. We're not like quite in the 70s anymore, but also how severe it can be for some people. And the fact that she was actually finding work during that time, I think that says a lot about her love for acting, her family, and all these other things like in those last couple of years of her life.
I agree.
So Annie Wersching, she's done a lot of great stuff. Like I said, she actually started and ended with Star Trek for what she brought to Twin Peaks. It was like, in terms of not screen time, but in terms of like her work in terms of audio, it's probably the most that you really hear someone portray a character outside of like the main cast from Twin Peaks. But so with that in mind, I think she will be missed. The next person that we have is Tom Sizemore. And J.B. Minton of A Skeleton Key to Twin Peaks has done a recording for us.
Friends, today we gather to remember and celebrate the life of Tom Sizemore, a remarkable actor whose passion and talent left an indelible mark on the world of cinema. Born in November 1961 in Detroit, Michigan, Tom rose to prominence in the early 1990s with a series of roles that showcased his intense and powerful acting style. He quickly became known for his ability to bring depth and authenticity to every character he portrayed. But Tom's journey was not without its struggles. He faced personal challenges that he battled with courage and determination. These struggles, while part of his story, never defined his spirit nor his immense talent. Instead, they showed his humanity, a facet that made his performances all the more touching and real. Among his many memorable roles, his portrayal of Anthony Sinclair in the 2017 revival of Twin Peaks: The Return stands out. In this prominent role, Tom brought a unique blend of vulnerability and intensity, captivating our audiences and reminding us of his extraordinary ability to connect with complex characters. His performance in Twin Peaks: The Return was not just acting. It was a display of his deep understanding of the human condition and a deep longing for redemption, something that resonates with viewers who continue to watch this show around the world. Tom Sizemore's legacy extends beyond the screen. He inspired a generation of actors and filmmakers, and his work continues to influence the industry today. His roles in films such as Saving Private Ryan and Black Hawk Down are lasting testaments to his talent and dedication to his craft. As we bid farewell to Tom Sizemore, we celebrate a life lived passionately and a career marked by unforgettable performances. His artistry will continue to inspire for decades, and his memory will live on in the hearts of all who continue to admire his work. Tom may have left the stage, but his legacy will forever remain a vital part of cinematic history and Twin Peaks legend. Thank you, Tom, for sharing your talent with us. Rest in peace, knowing your art will continue to touch us all for generations to come.
The first thing I should mention is that Tom Sizemore, I was blown away by the amount of work that he had, because he's done over 230 films from 1989 and even has stuff that's coming out this year posthumously. And it's someone that, like, right out of the gate from 1989 onward, he was working with auteurs. Like, he's worked with Steven Spielberg, Oliver Stone, Tony Scott, Michael Mann, Martin Scorsese, Kathryn Bigelow, and Ridley Scott. You hear this now of, like, with people who will work with some, like, say, Christopher Nolan, for example, where they'll take pay cuts because even A-listers want to work with auteurs of that caliber. But the fact that he was able to find work with people like that in such a short span, I think that says a lot about his acting range and what he brought. And I think even, like, what David Lynch saw in him to portray Anthony Sinclair. I was thinking about it is that Anthony Sinclair is kind of a tough character to portray. And I think Tom Sizemore is, like, the right person to do it, because, you know, this isn't like, say, Mr. C or the Mitchum brothers, where there's a certain, like, respect and fear that they have. Anthony Sinclair is a character that no one takes seriously. And I think it's very easy to have that character just kind of get lost in the shuffle with everything for a show like The Return. But I thought Tom Sizemore really stood toe-to-toe with Kyle MacLachlan, like, perfectly for it. Was there anything that we should talk about in terms of his filmography or what he brought to Twin Peaks?
I agree, though, about that. J.B. Minton said that he has a depth and authenticity. And I thought that was perfect, because he really does it very, such a unique acting style.
I agree. And I think that to talk about more of the behind the scenes aspects, he was always very transparent about that he was having issues with substance abuse. I was listening to a podcast with him. It was in early 2016. And, like, the way he's talking about it, he knows it's very serious subject matter. But the way he was talking about it is, like, he was talking about these stories as if, like, it was something that was, like, really compelling. Like, it's almost like a Carrie Fisher sort of thing, where you kind of laugh through the worst parts of it. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that you could really tell just by, like, the way he present himself. And unfortunately, he did die on March 3rd of 2023 of a brain aneurysm. And he was also on a bit of the younger end, because he was only 61 years old at the time. But he lived, like, four lifetimes when you look at his filmography, because when he wasn't working with auteurs, he was doing, like, 5, 10, 15 movies a year. And, you know, I was saying this about Annie Wershing, but, like, actors who find that much work, that's something, like, that really cannot be understated how incredible that is.
True. Very true.
I know that Anthony Sinclair isn't, like, one of the prominent go-to characters when people think of Twin Peaks, but I think that Tom Sizemore, when you back up with, like, all the auteurs that he worked with throughout his life, and that he got to work with Lynch, like, you know, before his death, I think it's absolutely incredible that we got to see him in such a role.
And he fit, like you said, he fit perfectly into The Return.
Oh, absolutely. And for the fourth and final one, we have Vinny Gadara of 12 Rainbow Trout to present his recording for Piper Laurie.
Hey, Colin. Thanks for having me. My name is Vinny Gadara. I write about Twin Peaks props and filming locations on Instagram under the handle 12 Rainbow Trout. And I also write for TwinPeaksBlog.com. And I'm here today to remember Piper Laurie. Piper passed away in October at the age of 91. So as sad as it is that she's no longer with us, we were very lucky to have her for as long as we did, and that she chose to spend so much of her life in front of a camera. As far as her life off screen, I would highly recommend reading her autobiography. It's called Learning to Live Out Loud. Especially the audiobook, which she narrates herself. It's wonderful to hear her entire life story in her very unmistakable Piper Laurie voice. before I had read the book, I had trouble imagining Piper as anything other than this very confident, professional, glamorous Hollywood star. So it's interesting to read about her childhood, which was the complete opposite. She did not come from wealth. She spent much of her upbringing in a boarding school away from her parents, where she, I think, struggled with the lack of affection and closeness. And so she had issues with confidence. She wasn't comfortable in her own skin. And I think she found that performing was sort of her escape from that crippling shyness. So she actually won a talent competition when she was a kid. And the prize was a screen test with Warner Brothers. So that was her ticket into Hollywood. She signed her first studio contract when she was still a teenager in the late 1940s. And at the time, Hollywood operated very differently than it does now. And to sign on with the studio meant that they essentially controlled every aspect of her life. So the first thing they did was change her name. Her real name was Rosetta Jacobs, and they gave her the stage name of Piper Laurie and crafted this public persona for her, telling the tabloids that she ate rose petals for every meal and bathed in milk to preserve her perfect skin. She was working consistently and became a household name, but wasn't necessarily happy with the roles she was getting. So she eventually left Hollywood for New York and pursued a theater career, which I think was more fulfilling for her at the time. Reading these stories in her book, it's clear that she was not an actor because she was pursuing fame or attention or wealth. She was following work that was meaningful to her. So several times in her career, she left Hollywood to pursue something more fulfilling, whether that was working on stage or performing for the troops or doing more tactile work. She was also a sculptor. So many of the film and TV roles that we remember her for were actually the roles that brought her back into Hollywood, like The Hustler and Carrie, which basically came at a time when she had already moved on from her life as a film actor. The way she talked about her experiences with directors like Brian De Palma and David Lynch, you could tell that she valued work that would take her somewhere interesting and challenging as an artist over something that would give her top billing. She spoke so gleefully about her time on Twin Peaks. It was like it wasn't even a job for her. It was play, which is interesting because from a fan perspective, I see Piper's portrayal of Catherine Martell as one of the most competent dramatic performances in the show that serves as a grounding force for all of the kind of more outlandish, colorful bits. But the Twin Peaks chapter in her book is almost entirely about her time as Mr. Tajimura and how much fun she had keeping that secret from the rest of the cast and crew, basically stifling laughter for an entire day so she wouldn't ruin her makeup. Of course, through today's lens, we generally understand that having a white actor portray a person of color using prosthetics and heavy makeup is insensitive at best. I think from Piper's perspective, she was still the girl with crippling social anxiety who got to fully embody another person, even around the people that she knew and saw every day. I think she was confident in her work, but she may have carried some of that anxiety and shyness still in other social situations, which is why it surprised me that she became sort of a fixture in the horror convention circuit where she would potentially meet and interact with hundreds of strangers on any given weekend. I had the pleasure of being one of those strangers once. I met her at the Monsterpalooza convention in Southern California in 2018. I had brought a painting for her to sign because when I first started attending Twin Peaks fan events, this was long before the return was announced, and there just wasn't that much artwork or anything like that on the market to get signed. Etsy was not saturated with Twin Peaks art like it is now, so I made my own, and I had painted a stencil-style portrait of Laura Palmer that I collected the cast autographs on. And so when Piper signed it, the marker she used was sort of dead, and it didn't look as bold as the rest of the autographs on the painting. And she seemed genuinely concerned that I would be upset. And she looked up at me and she was like, "I'm really not happy with how that turned out." And I assured her it was okay. And we spoke for a few minutes. My buddy that I drove down with asked her about her favorite directors that she had worked with in her career. And she paused and took the time to answer very thoughtfully and spoke very highly of David Lynch and Brian De Palma specifically, and was just a very kind, soft-spoken, considerate person, and not really the sort of force that you see on screen. And it was enlightening, and reading her book just kind of really bridged the gap for me between that person that I met and the person that I saw on screen. So yeah, Piper Laurie was a treasure, and we were lucky to have her for so long. She was one of the actors in Twin Peaks whose performance was strong and consistent and allowed the show to take big risks while still being just a competent drama at its core, which is kind of what's kept it evergreen for over 30 years now, and why it's still influential to the medium of television. And it's nice to know that the person behind that role was kind and humble and enjoyed working on Twin Peaks as much as we enjoy watching it.
I know that in the case with Piper Laurie, I think that in terms of like how prominent their work was out compared to any other actor from Twin Peaks, I don't think anyone comes close to Piper Laurie, because we're talking about someone who her career ended a little bit early in the early 60s with The Hustler, but then she returned in the 70s with Carrie. Like, I mean, talk about two movies of like one to exit and one to return, because that's just something that's just so remarkable about how different Hollywood was at the time. Vinny was talking about in his recording about like what the industry expected from her and like why she felt like she couldn't really be there at a certain point. But for her to come back in a different Hollywood when, you know, we had like people like Brian De Palma for Carrie, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, where it was like something very new, very different. You know, people talk about like, you know, when they see Piper Laurie at conventions, whether they're there for Carrie or for Twin Peaks, I have always heard the most wonderful things about her at these events. And I really love the story that Vinny shared about when he got to meet her and how she was actually concerned about how the autograph looked. Because, you know, there's other actors out there where it's like, you know, they'll just sign it and then they'll just dismissively say that it dried or something. But for her, you can tell she was very passionate about her fans and her work.
Right. A true professional, I think. A true professional and perfectionist.
To veer into Twin Peaks, I remember, I think it was on the Phil Donahue special, she talked about how it was like the one show that she did that she was eager to watch every week. I'm really glad that she loved it. I mean, of course, no, I'm sure she absolutely loved working with Dave Lynch on the pilot and like working throughout like the original series. But I think it's worth addressing that she did win a Golden Globe for Catherine Martell. When we think of Twin Peaks, we think of like, some of us probably think of the esoteric stuff first and foremost. But for someone like Catherine Martell, she was very much in that more, I guess, like grounded aspect of Twin Peaks, even though we never saw her in the Black Lodge. There's never anything about like the Owl Cave Ring. There's never anything of, you know, she never touched that part of Twin Peaks. But for her to be like the intense businesswoman that she was, that she could grab everyone's attention with every single episode, I think that says like a tremendous amount for Piper Laurie.
Oh, for sure. Like Vinny said, she really provided such a professional anchor to a show that's kind of a quirky show at times and with kind of out there storylines and things. And she really legitimized things. She's just pure class. I remember when I first started watching, I was in my early 20s, and she scared me. Her character was just so intense and so bad, but yet such depth of character. You could see little glimpses of her humanity and maybe even get a glimpse of why her character is the way that it is. And she brought all of that with her skill. And she's one of my favorite characters because through the years now, because I've watched Twin Peaks countless times, as I mature now, I have more and more and more appreciation for the character of Catherine and what she brings to the show. Just, she's just amazing.
We'll talk a little bit about Catherine Martell before we get into more of her filmography. Catherine Martell was actually saved from death effectively because Piper Laurie was working on Storyville with Mark Frost. That's why we see in the season two finale, we see Andrew Packard grab the key and say, Catherine will never know. It's because she was filming Storyville. And Catherine, while we don't see her in that episode, she lives on because of that. But to shift to other films that, when I think of Piper Laurie, I actually think of Return to Oz, and I think of, like, you know, her playing the guardian for Dorothy, and just how different that was from Catherine Martell. And also, I this is something for another episode, but the story of like making Return to Oz was something that was just like so far off the mark of, like, you know, what Hollywood is doing, like all the crazy behind the scenes stuff. I think that Piper, she might have been able to veer away from it because she was on the farm segments rather than like in Oz, but she always found like extraordinary work like throughout the decades. She was always wonderful with fans. And honestly, yeah, I stand by is that I think in terms of enduring legacies in cinema, I think Piper Laurie is like among the best in all the Twin Peaks cast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I didn't realize all of that about her childhood either and how much she overcame. What a difficult, challenging childhood that she had.
Yeah, Vinny also does talk about is that there's just like such like a natural confidence that Piper Laurie has, like when, whether it's talking to people, whether it's when she portrays Catherine Martell. Her book was, it showed that vulnerability that was like, you know, that was underneath it this whole time. But I think that just reaffirms like just what an immense talent she was. And of course, we have to talk about like her and Mr. Tojimura, like that for her. I think that was the thing that she really loved, because I guess I don't know too much explicitly, but I could see there being an ambiguity of thinking that Catherine might be dead after the season one finale. But for her to come back, to be able to choose a nationality, to hide this from the whole cast for, I think it's at least 7 episodes. I mean, I could see that just being an actor's dream of just like, just doing something that's so wild on camera and even off camera.
I'll tell you, I didn't know. I had no clue whatsoever. And I know that it would be different being right there on set with her. But as a viewer, I didn't. I mean, I remember years ago watching it originally thinking there's something seems a little bit off. But everything in Twin Peaks is maybe a little bit off. But I would have never guessed. And can you imagine if we didn't have any more Catherine after the first season? Oh my gosh.
And I think that, and this is both applicable to the character and her performance, but it's just the way that she portrayed Mr. Tojimura that showed that different facet of Catherine. And also just the fact that Piper just had like, I don't know if it's the most fun that she had when it came to acting, but the way she talks about it, you can feel the energy of even just reading stuff like, you know, from like interviews about how much she truly loved that part.
Yeah. And I love it because not only is she playing a character, but she's playing a character in a disguise. So it's like a whole other level of character So she's still the same character, but then she's this other character as well. So that's really awesome. And then, like you said, to do it for so long on the show, it wasn't like it was Wyndham Earle putting on a cow costume.
The one thing we'll end with Piper is that we are talking about people who died tragically young, but she lived to be 91 years old. It said that she was dealing with a long-term illness, but, you know, I think of like how after 91, that's like decades of incredible work. Again, I can't state it enough, but when Vinny talks about how wonderful she was with all the fans, because he's not the only one. I know other fans who had the time of their lives meeting her. So Piper did something absolutely extraordinary. And I think that she'll be absolutely missed.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I have to thank Thor Omley. I have to thank Agent Ivy, JB Mitten, and Vinny Gadara for taking the time to do this, because I know that when it comes to honoring the memory of these individual actors, that a lot goes into what they brought to the world of Twin Peaks, what they brought to acting, fans, personal lives. And I thought everyone did an absolutely extraordinary work.
Agreed. All four of them.
But I guess before we sign off, was there anything you wanted to plug in terms of where people can find you or anything that you're doing as of now?
Oh, I'm just busy with the family, being a grandma. I am looking forward to going to the Real Twin Peaks Days next month in February on the date that Agent Cooper comes into town. So that, I'm looking forward to doing that and seeing old friends, meeting new friends. And yeah, that's going to be really fun.
I'll see you there for Twin Peaks Day, because I'm going as well.
Yep.
Also, I just want to say thank you for coming on, because I know that going through like this research, it takes a lot. But I think that it's important to talk about like what these people brought to Twin Peaks, what Dave Lynch saw in them, other things they brought in their filmography. And I just want to thank you for helping me on this.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you. It was really, really fascinating. I loved it. I love the opportunity. Thank you.
Very glad. And I guess, you know, for anyone listening, this will be my last episode for a while. I'm going to take a break before I return to my traditional episodes in 2024. But I just want to thank everyone for listening, and I'll see you all in the coming months.
Moving near the edge at night. Dust is dancing in the space, a dog and bird are far away. The sun comes up and down each day. Love, don't go away. sun comes up and down east.